travel from one county seat to another by rail. Mm.
You'd take too much time to go in the other way.
Yes, yeah. And going there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any automobile then, or the sheriff. They never allowed me to have an automobile before I when I was in the sheriff's office.
Well, the population, I suppose, was pretty well centered in 8 or 10 places, was it?
No, it was.
Or was it beginning to scatter out even then?
There was mining counties where mining camps were, like Gila and, you know, Globe and Bisbee, Douglas.
Tahoe going then, I guess it was.
There were a lot of places with mines, and then towns like Phoenix and Tucson and Prescott, Yuma, Bisbee, Douglas. It was a varied. The mining industry was the principal industry in the state.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it produced more revenue than anything else at that time. But there was agricultural development, Salt River Valley, Yuma, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that when I was a sheriff, if they caught a man for me, or I had a paper to serve, a summons or something else, somebody, I go do it myself. I didn't send a deputy.
Well, you, by going around yourself.
Well, I went around myself during the 7 years, don't you see?
You made contacts and all those places.
Yes, so I would have been in the courthouses and got acquainted with the city marshals, peace officers generally, United States marshals, customs officers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved the penitentiary from Yuma up to Florence, which is, Yuma was west of Phoenix, about 200 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Florence was east of Phoenix, about 50 miles. And there was a branch road went up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all the traffic was, transportation was by rail. So prisoners convicted in southern Arizona came into Maricopa and brought into Phoenix. And the train came in the evening, and we'd put them in jail overnight for them and help them to get on the train in the morning. Same way up north, from Prescott and Kingman and Flagstaff and so on, wherever somebody was convicted, they'd bring them down and we'd put them in jail overnight. So I got acquainted with in that way and did favors for the deputies and the sheriffs.
All over the state.
Give an opportunity they could go around town in the evening and so on. And I got to know them. Well, then I also knew that officers and men in the National Guard. See, I'd been in that for 7 or 8 years, 7 years. So that was the only acquaintance I had.
Mm-hmm.
So when there was talk about who he candidate, well, Lamar Cobb, who was a Georgian, the Cobb family down there, a very famous political family, he was a county engineer in Greenlee County and a member of the Constitutional Convention. Mulford Windsor was a newspaper man in Yuma, and he was a member of the Constitutional Convention. And they announced early that they were going to run for Congress. Everybody thought that was one or the other would be it.
Yeah.
And so I never said a word to a living soul about being a candidate until I was back at Camp Perry, Ohio, at the National Rifle Matches. We'd finished the team matches that I had to attend. Then you could win some individual matches if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And President Taft issued his proclamation that upon the drafting of a constitution and the election of officials and so on, and that certain things be done, Arizona and New Mexico would become states, you see. And so I had never spoken to a living soul about running for Congress. I got Mrs. Hayden, and she says, "You've got your nerve."
And there he's on for you.
Yeah, sticks.
Frank.
Yes, sir.
You called him up and said he's going to come here.
He's
coming up here at 3 o'clock.
Just a little after 3. No, maybe I better give Banks the call and tell him that.
What?
at the Secretary.
Banks Young, maybe I better tell him that Secretary...
Well, you called Banks, I wanted to call Banks up and tell him that I just talked to Murphy.
Yes.
And Murphy said...
He'd be here right after 3.
He'd be here right after 3 o'clock, and I told him I'd be here.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Fowler Hamilton is here. You have an appointment with him at 11 o'clock. He's a little early.
We'll be through in 4 or 5 minutes, right. Tell him.
You just finish this story and then I'll get out of the way.
Well, so, I say, I never told anybody that I was going to be a candidate until the President Taft issued his proclamation. Then I told the rifle team there from Arizona, I'm going to run for Congress. They said, fine. We're all for you. Well, so we left and went over to Chicago, and I spoke to Ms. Hayden, and she spoke to me, said, if you're going to run for Congress, you're going to have a good picture. And we asked who the best photographer was, and a man named Sykes took a picture of me. Because you've been in the sheriff's office in Phoenix, seen the former sheriffs. Well, it's there in the, well, I don't know, that's the only, that one where I know where it is, but I had a...
Big wide-brimmed hat?
Yes, wide-brimmed hat. Pretty good looking young fellow. And I used that on a little folder, picture on one side, and a little statement of what I stood for. And then the only newspaper support I had, any kind, was from an old fellow named Sam Small, who had been a noticed evangelist, but he was with us, had been for a long time with the Chicago, the Atlanta Constitution newspaper man. Mm-hmm. He'd founded a little weekly paper in Phoenix, and I got acquainted with him, and I went to see him. He wrote about a very nice little half-column story. That's all I had in the way of camp. And not one newspaper in Arizona supported me, not a daily or another weekly. They were all tied up. The other men had been running so long.
Yeah.
All tied up for somebody, and Windsor being a newspaper man, like,
they were friendly to him.
And all during the campaign, there was no mention that I had a chance. I was just utterly ignored. And I know what people said, they told Ms. Hayden I was going to be terribly disappointed and all that kind of thing. Well, I went down to Yuma and told him I didn't come to get any votes. And, Windsor was a fine man, and I just came down to get acquainted with him. He said, no, but of course, I'd like to get votes. I went up to Greeley County and told him the same thing. And I carried every county in the state but those two, and of course, geez, I lost by 19 votes.
Mm-hmm. And you attributed mainly to the friends you had made?
The peace officers and the National Guardsmen. They were young men, and they just got out and did the job for me. That's all there was to it.
Well, I'll get out of your way and let you see Mr. Hamilton.
Awesome.
He and Major Stedman were two surviving Confederate soldiers that served the Confederate Army who were members of Congress at that time.
Uh-huh.
And they're both very kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both very fine men. Well, I was over in the house. I'd been there for a terrible long. So I remember they had an agricultural appropriation bill up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some money to fight forest fires in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And a motion was made to increase that amount because it had fire. Well, we'd had a big forest, quite a big forest fire up around Flagstaff, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, I can chip in my 2 bits worth and tell them that I think it's a good amendment. So under the 5-minute rule, I just got him to say a few words, and not to that effect. And I came down, I sat down next to Uncle Bob Talbot, and he said, well, you just couldn't hold it, you just had to tell.
Was that your first year?
Huh?
Was that in your first year?
Yes, that was along, and I came in February, and this must have been along in March or April sometime.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first time I spoke on the floor of the House, at least, was on something I thought I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, him. He said, well, he said, you just couldn't hold it, you had to tell him, didn't you? That reporter took down every word you said.
Yeah.
And he says, it's going to be in the record for all time to come. He said, I said a lot of fool things when I first came here. I wish I could get out of that record, but you can't ever get it out. It wasn't in there. says, be careful about what you say. Then he gave me some good advice. He said, now, you're new here. It's just like a man coming to a new town. You don't know anything about him. Well, they observe him. If he pays his bills and he's honest and tells the truth, by the way, he establishes confidence and gets along. He said, you've got to do the same thing. I said, if you belong to a committee, know what is in every bill that's reported out of that committee. Sure, you understand it thoroughly. Then if somebody misrepresents the facts on the floor, get up and correct him. So by and by, they say, well, this fellow knows what he's talking about, you see. But sure, you're right, you know what you're doing.
Did he use that figure of speech about workhorses and show horses?
Well, he said, you know, there's two kinds of congressmen. There's workhorses and there's show horses. And he said, you better be a workhorse. And that's what I determined to be, for that matter. And
that looks like you've proved that it was pretty good advice.
Well, first place, I was never on the order anyhow. The other thing, on the other hand, I had been in business and I could present facts, talk factually about things. And as I made it my business to kind of follow the old man's advice.
Did William Jennings Bryan also talk to you about what you ought to do when you got here?
When I left Phoenix that day to come back to Washington, I came out to Maricopa to this junction where I told you about and W.J. Bryan happened to be on the train.
That was coming to the east?
He was coming east on a trip. No, he wasn't. He was going to Tucson to see his son. One of his sons wasn't in very good health. And then moved out to Tucson. He was going to Tucson to meet the boy and then visit with him. And so I rode from Maricopa to Tucson with him. It's about 100 miles. And I introduced myself, and he recognized me. I'd met him before. He was campaigning out there. And in fact, I introduced him at one time at a meeting. He said, now, don't make any 4th of July speeches. He said, they all make them. He said, if you start a 4th of July kind of speech, why, they just read the newspaper. They won't pay attention to you. But he said, if you give them facts, they listen. And then he told me that his first speech in the House, when he came there first time, was that he was observed a contractor doing some paving work here in the district. And made up his mind that he was cheating the district. And he got his facts, and he went up there and he exposed the contractor on the floor. He said, I got close attention. He didn't talk about free silver or gold or anything like that. He talked about a paving contract for the District of Columbia, where he thought the contractor was cheating the district. And the House listened to him. He said, you have your facts, and you'll get along. It's the same line that the old man gave me.
Was the federal aid to highways program, was that the first big thing that you got interested in?
Well, that Federal Aid Highway Act was passed over in the House under the sponsorship of a man named Dorsey Shackelford of Missouri. And all I did was kind of chip in and say it was a good thing. I was not a member of the committee, but I was interested in it because I knew that how important it
was. That about 1916, the first one?
Huh?
Was that about 1916, the first?
Yes, it was highway about. It was 1916-17. I know that it was under discussion because after the bill passed, McKellar always had this story about how he and John Bankhead. Bankhead had sponsored it over here. And Shackelford had it in the House and Bankhead here. And John Bankhead wanted to get some money from, get the president to recommend some money to start it off. And he said, the president don't like me like he does you, McKellar, and I want you to go with me down to the White House and we'll talk to him about his business. So they went down and they agreed that if they could get about $3 million to start, it would be a pretty good little start. That'd go on. So they went in and talked to the president about it. And the president said, I had a grave doubt about whether I ought to sign that bill. He said, I don't know about the government going into the road business. So there's authority to do it. I've been in the Constitution that's developed post roads.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know if that was the right thing to do or not. Well, McKellar spoke up. It looked like we might get to see the World War had started in 14.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like we might get in trouble.
Yeah.
And he said, well, did you ever think, Mr. President, about the military uses of this? If we had trouble, you had to move troops quickly, why, the highway system would be beneficial. He said, I never thought about that. And they talked along, and I don't remember the exact figure, whether it was $20 million or something like that. It was a good size chunk. And he, the president went, how'd that do? See? And McKellar said that when the sum from $3 million that we're going to ask for,
up to 20, they jumped on it.
The old bank had never fainted. He couldn't hardly believe it, you know. But the president recommended it, and they made the first appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Now, was that before the Hayden-Cartwright bill?
Oh, yes. This was way back in the 19. Well, now, it was not until I came to the Senate, and Keith Pittman of Nevada and Will King of Utah said that I had had experience in handling appropriations in the House. You see, at that time, the Agriculture Committee reported out the...
Yeah, each committee reported the appropriation.
I was on the Committee on Indian Affairs. I asked for that when I first came,
mm-hmm.
and I got to be chairman of it. And I'd reported Indian appropriation bills to the House,
mm-hmm.
and all we got $10, $12 million a year, we were doing big then.
Yeah.
And, but I had appropriating experience, they said.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just, since our part of the country wasn't represented, I must go on there. Well, they were on the committee line. So I woke up in a week after I was there on the appropriations committee. I didn't expect it at all.
In the Senate?
And I didn't ask for the Post Office and Post Roads Committee, but they put me on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, McKellar had that chairmanship. And of course, I came along right next to him in the committee in the course of time.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally agreed that he would look after the Post Office part of it, and I'd look after the Post Roads part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So along in the 30s, you see, mm-hmm. after Roosevelt came here,
mm-hmm.
well, then I reported out about half a dozen or more of these every 2 year bills.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the Hayden-Cartwright Act.
Mm-hmm.
That act was this way.
At this point, during the October 10th interview, we ran out of tape, and so there's a jump here to until we picked up with another rolls, but we're still continuing October 10, 1961.
Irrigation and reclamation
mm-hmm.
of arid land, they had them up. So I had about four committees that I had
mm-hmm.
that were of local of importance to the people of my state.
Mm-hmm.
I asked for those, I said nobody wants them, they have them.
Did the Indians have the vote in those days, or did that come gradual?
That was way back in the 1920s when they put an act in that they declared them American citizens.
Mm-hmm. Do they all vote now? Are they all entitled to vote now?
Well, if they, we have in Arizona at least an educational qualification.
Oh, no, but I mean the fact that they're Indians, there's no bar.
No, if the man, like anybody else, qualifies as mm-hmm. being able to read and write,
yeah.
and know what's...
Living on a reservation doesn't prevent them from voting, does it?
No, they can vote if they're qualified.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Same as any other citizen.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Well, when you first came to the House, I suppose there wasn't much irrigation or reclamation in the West, was there, back in 1912? I mean, the
they had
artificial irrigation.
Yes, because don't you see, Theodore Roosevelt did two things the bodily effects of the West, he, by executive order, reserved a great area for forest service. He did it the same way about national parks and monuments and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, they passed an act saying he couldn't continue to do that, but that he could have to refer it to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he just got out an order taking in the damnedest area for forests and parks and everything else, and then signed the act.
Mm-hmm.
See? So it tied up that a lot of it had to be taken out of the forest after it was built forest land.
Mm-hmm.
But that was why we have the big forest reserve action at Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way, they passed the reclamation law
mm-hmm.
under his administration, which authorized the receipts from the sale of public lands to be devoted to reclamation, storage of water and irrigation. And that started it all. And under that, the Salt River Project was the first one in Arizona to build.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was before I came to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That project was under construction
yeah.
while I was there. So there was reclamation was established
mm-hmm.
going concern when I came.
But in later years, they've gone way beyond this, just using receipts from.
Oh, yeah. Well, we began appropriating money directly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had to be returned to the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Manning and I, we got through the Joe Manning Amendment that when it was repaid, it would still stay in the reclamation fund.
That's revolving.
Yeah, in the revolving fund.
Mm-hmm.
So they have now a reclamation fund that is used annually. It isn't sufficient that we make direct appropriations on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
See, so
how have they gone up, say, since 1912, the annual expenditures for reclamation?
It's gone up materially, because but on the other hand, the thing that's so hard to get through people's head is they just look, well, you spend this money and it's interest-free and it's kind of a pork barrel thing. As a matter of fact, it's an investment in a capital investment in the natural resources of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for instance, the Salt River Project now is returning to the Treasury the income tax and the excess profits taxes and so on, more than the entire cost of that project
mm-hmm.
every year.
Isn't that what started Arizona and the Southwest raising cotton and other crops that they never raised before?
Well, they gradually got into cotton growing and
mm-hmm.
things of that kind. That was the water available
yeah.
to the land.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, they couldn't have grown.
I guess that's also accounted for the increase in population out there.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had people write me this last year from Maricopa County, new settlers, new people come in,
mm-hmm.
didn't know anything about it. I suspect between us that some of them were retired people who came out and figured they'd have so much to buy a home and live on, and the cost went up.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't want their taxes or anything else to spend.
Yeah.
They jumped me about voting for this outrageous pork barrel public works bill that the president vetoed. Well, I wrote and told them that Phoenix, a little town, 10,000-15,000 people, floods came up to Jefferson Street and washed out the dams, the brush dam that supplied the canal, and
mm-hmm.
the farmers wouldn't have water and so on. And it was necessary to store that water in a dam and so on. And that was a public works project.
Mm-hmm.
And we built the Roosevelt Dam. And at the dam, we generated power. So it brought cheap power down to into the area.
When was that built, Senator, the Roosevelt Dam?
Well, it was started as the first project in the United States after the Reclamation Act was passed. And it was completed just about the time I was elected to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
See,
mm-hmm.
that construction
was way back.
Huh?
That went way back.
Well, that's the first one in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The Reclamation Law.
That was named after Teddy, I suppose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fiddler came out and dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
He came out and made a speech when mm-hmm. the dam was completed, so.
How far along is this Central Valley project, the Central Arizona project? Has that ever been started?
Well, there's a case where there was a dispute over who had the water in the Colorado River.
Oh, yeah.
We could use all of it. California could use all of it.
Mm-hmm.
California claimed that they had taken it first and they needed it the worst and there were more people there and so on. And they actually did the work well.
Well, is that tied in with the Boulder Dam fight in any way, or is that a separate question
well,
entirely?
The Boulder Dam was, that's a long story.
Yeah.
It goes back to, in order to get an understanding about the storage of water, Phil Swing and I went down to see Hoover, said that you can't get an agreement among these states because unless you get up some kind of a compact between them.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't do to have some ordinary person representing the United States. You're the Secretary of Commerce, and you've got a reputation mm-hmm. as a great engineer, and you should become the federal representative on that commission.
Mm-hmm.
And each state appointed commissioners to negotiate, and he presided.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I met and met in one place and another. Didn't agree on anything. And I went down and talked to him one day and said, I'm sorry I took this thing on, I'm never going to get anywhere. He said, listen, you're no politician. Said, you just wait till after the election, call these people together. Before election, well, of course,
each
if I did anything, why, they'd say you're giving away your birthright.
Yeah.
But after election, if you'll call together, you'll get an agreement. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
He said it. Well, unfortunately, the governor, Republican governor of Arizona, who appointed the commissioner, decided after he was defeated to go over there, stand up there when this thing was signed up. See, and come back and said it was a wonderful thing. Well, old George Hunt just got off right there and said it was no good. So we didn't ratify the compact.
Mm-hmm.
Then they determined that Arizona would get nothing out of that Boulder Dam,
mm-hmm.
but we hadn't ratified the compact.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to fight.
That was going on just about the time you came over to the Senate.
I came over to the Senate expecting to sit quietly here like I did in the House and learn the way, and I got stuck in a filibuster.
Yeah. Was that in 26?
I came into the Senate on March 4th, 1927.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And this was in 27 or 28.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When was the, Senator, when was the Central Arizona Project first conceived as a means of getting water into the Maricopa County area and into Central Arizona?
Well, that's been an idea for a long, long time. That area, we're cultivating more land than there was water for.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were pumping it underground and it would be exhausted. It's an exact parallel to what happened to San Joaquin Valley in California.
Mm-hmm.
They use all the surface water. Can drill wells, and they drill it down, got all the water out from underground,
mm-hmm.
and the thing was going to go back to the desert. So they went to another source, which is Sacramento River. There's a great dam up there, and stored the water, generated power, and when it comes down to the near the mouth of San Joaquin, they pump it up to the irrigate the lower half of the valley.
Oh, yeah.
And water enough for the upper half. And so it works. Very, very prosperous situation there now.
Well, in this Boulder Dam filibuster, you forced California to agree to amendments that Arizona wanted, didn't you?
Well, we tied the thing up for about a month over here first before Congress adjourned, and then Hiram Johnson got it made the exclusive unfinished business. Well, the Senate would have met in December,
mm-hmm.
and Keith Pittman in Nevada was our negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
What we got out of was the right each state to put in a generator
uh-huh.
in the dam so we could get some power.
Mm-hmm.
And we got $200, $1,000 a year in lieu of taxes because the property was located in Arizona. We didn't get any water out of it directly,
mm-hmm.
but that was. They had the votes when we finally, but we we ran on there for about a week, and I just slept and stayed over there that morning. But after we come to where we could go, I slept there on the couch, and up the next morning, the quorum came in just about sunup. It took all night to get them.
Yeah.
And when they came, I started talking. I said, now you go home, get a bath, and get shaved, and get squared around, get breakfast and all that. And I'm going to talk till 10 o'clock.
Was it just you and Ashurst?
Yeah, that's all. I'll talk till 10 o'clock, and then we're going to have an agreement here. So we did. That's the way it worked out.
I suppose that experience is one reason why you've always felt so keen about the right of freedom of speech in the Senate, isn't it?
Well, that and the fact that I told you that Arizona would have been tied up with New Mexico.
That's
the real reason. The Southern was, oh, Charlie Dawes, who was the vice president, didn't tell me. He said, I'll say this, that you never talked about it when it was germane to the subject. You didn't read the Bible or some of that kind.
What did Henry Ashurst read from?
What?
What did Ashurst, Senator Ashurst, read from? Did he
talked along too about it.
That the irrigation.
You see, when you talk about water and power, things like that, you've got a wide field of ramifications to where it goes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is the Central Valley, Central Arizona project underway now, or?
No, we had this, couldn't get, twice Senator McFarland and I passed the bill through the Senate. But too many of us in California, the big delegation over there, wouldn't let it pass.
In the House, you mean?
The House. So, then that's the way. So then we finally decided to sue the state of Arizona, to sue California for equitable division of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that suit's been going on quite a time. And the court appointed a very able lawyer named Rifkin. I first knew him when he worked for Bob Wagner up here as a clerk.
Uh-huh.
And Bob said he was, the way the story I got was that Wagner wanted a bright young man, and he asked some law school that he attended in New York City, sent one of their best graduates, and they did. It was Rifkin. And he helped draft the Wagner Act. And Wagner. Then Wagner took him in as a partner, and then got him appointed as a judge. But he didn't like the bench, and he resigned. He got an enormous practice in New York. Where those two liners hit out in the ocean, he's in one of those cases.
Oh, yeah. Well, is that case still in court?
He's, for 2 years, he's held hearings there all around over the area. And he then wrote a recommendation to the court, which is favorable to us. California don't like it, and they were going to have an argument over there before the court, but we hope the court will decide the case this year. When it does, then they tell us how much water we got. Then we can talk about the budget. That's the way it is.
Well, that may clear it up. Well, I'm wearing you out today, I'm afraid, and we better quit, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Senator.
All right. At that point, I thought the interview was concluded and cut the recorder off, but then the Senator, Jerry O'Leary, asked him about the loss of the finger on his hand, and the Senator explained it, so I cut back in and got part of his explanation anyway.
And when you blast, you put this cap on the end of a fuse.
Uh-huh.
And when it goes off, it detonates
the dynamite.
I picked one of those things up and was fooling with a wire, and it went off my hand.
Uh-huh.
I was very lucky. There was an old surgeon in Phoenix, a German, who had been through the Franco-Prussian War. Familiar with surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they took me down there, and the other doctor said, well, he just have two fingers left. He said, no, I'm going to save this one.
Is that so?
And he did. The same way with his thumb, you see. He put a pad on the
on
end,
the
of,
end
it.
Of it. Saved both of it.
And it got so I could play football with it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, now, when would you have some more time, Senator, for one more chat?
Well,
sometime tomorrow?
I got to clean up this goddamn egg cup thing now.
Yeah, well.
What's tomorrow? Wednesday. Let's wait till Thursday.
But did you? You didn't took
I took. Is this the same thing?
No, but I've changed this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, suppose I leave it with Fritz, and I'll call him up.
All right.
That did conclude, then, the interview of October the 10th, 1961, and 2 days later, on October 12th, we set up this next and final portion of this series of, final interview of this series of three. In addition to Jerry O'Leary, Senator Hayden, and myself, we had present at this session and speaking as a voice, I'm sure you'll distinguish in the others, John Murdoch, a former congressman from Arizona who served in the House as congressman at large from our state from 1937 through 1952. So here it goes then, the final one on October 12th,
1961.
What years were you in the House, Mr. Murdoch?
I came in 1937, and I was a member of the House for 16 years.
Before that, he was a veteran of the Arizona Territorial Normal School.
I came in 1914.
And there was an opportunity to become a candidate for Congress. And he was among, how many were there? 10, 11?
Quite a collection there in 1930.
What was the name of the school?
Tempe.
Oh, Tempe, no.
It had become a teacher's college by 1936.
Oh, yes, it was Norman State Teacher's College.
In 1914, right. It was a normal school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you came to the House after the Senator had moved over, after he had moved over to the Senate. You've been over there about 10 years then.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to tell you that there were enough graduates scattered around Arizona to elect him to Congress.
Enough of his own pupils, huh?
Yes.
The remark was often made about Dr. Moore, that he had brought enough babies into the world in Arizona, that when they grew up, they elected him governor. That was true in a sort of an educational way with me.
Yeah.
I was afraid the senator hadn't seen one thing that, and I brought it over to him this morning. This was a list of Arizona characters, and I referred you to it. Did you ever get a copy?
No.
Well, I'm so short on these copies that I thought the only one I'd get my hands on, I better hand to Senator Hayden. But one of these characters was Charles Trumbull Hayden. And
he's written,
he's your Senator's father.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed the Senator some other literature there that only a school teacher would be interested in.
This. John's story about my father. A later one, somewhat revised.
Well, that's Mrs. Murdoch's, but that's for the younger children. This is for the general public.
I see.
Mr. Murdoch, what do you think is the secret of Senator Hayden's success as to become the first man to stay 50 years in Congress?
Well, he has a rugged constitution, for one thing. I tell you, it takes physical stamina to stand that. 16 years almost put me in the grave, but it's that way. And he's carried a tremendous burden. I think the general public has no conception of the load this man has carried. That reason, I rather shouted at him as we passed him the halls over at the, on the street, without bothering him too much. But if I were writing the story of Carl Hayden, I'd take in a lot of things that have happened here in Congress. He's been, it's fortunate for the West that we've had a man who knows the West and who is a native son of the West, of the state of Arizona, and able to get on such committees and function in the most important way. For instance, I can't help but think of how much the Western states owe to him for shaping public land laws and also public roads. Right at the time when the automobile made it imperative that we have something more than trails, here's a man who came along, and just at the time when we were building up funds by gasoline taxes and that sort of thing for distribution from Washington under the control of the states, here's a man who got what some people back east regarded as an undue formula in the distribution of public highway funds. So,
well, I didn't originate that formula. That was old man Shackelford. Explain to them.
Yeah.
You see, I was just a modest member of the House interested in the road legislation at that time, way back in 1916, 17, and when the original act was passed. But when I came over here, without saying anything to me, I was placed upon the committee on post office, post road. And that it became the duty of that committee to report out every 2 years
a
bill appropriating money for the roads for a 2 year period. And so it would be apportioned among the states.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator McKellar I was next to him on the committee. He turned that over to me, the post road department. He looked at the post office department.
Mm-hmm.
He divided the work.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I told you, reported out a series of bills every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this Hyde Hayden Cartwright Act was one of them.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you a story about when the war broke out. No, I beg your pardon. When President Wilson was elected, President Roosevelt was elected, what the hell's the matter? Of course, the times were very bad, and he was anxious to provide employment.
Mm-hmm.
And he had prepared a $3 billion bill, which Senator Wagner sponsored.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, for all kinds of
public workers.
Public works of all kinds and so on. And I went down and talked to him and said, if you want to put people to work quickly, I said, a lot of this that you plan required planning, and planning takes time, and you can't put men to work right away.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll tell you how to do it. Give the highway departments money.
Mm-hmm.
They've all planned their roads ahead. That's their business, is to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, he'd appointed a legislative committee and look into that. The Secretary of War, John Dern of Utah,
oh, yeah.
The Secretary of Agriculture, old man Wallace, Henry's father, mm-hmm. and Miss Perkins, the Secretary of Labor, said, you go see them. I went to Dern, but Governor, he knew all about it
mm-hmm.
immediately. And,
you've been from Utah, wasn't you?
Yeah, Governor Utah. And Wallace said, well, this bureau of my department's a good bureau, and I'm for it. And then I went to see Miss Perkins. She couldn't see it. She said that the distress was in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, you were saying about people in a line going into a
soup
kitchen or something like that. I'll tell you, there's as many heartaches, as much grief and unemployment and trouble. In the rest of the United States, there isn't a great cities.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to reach that by a method of giving them work.
Yeah.
Well, I went back and reported to him and told him what they said. And he said, well, how much money do you want? I said, $400 million, which would be equivalent these days of the value of the dollar, about $1 billion.
Yeah.
And he said, well, how'd you get that figure? I thought I'd telegraph to every state highway department in the United States and ask them how much money they could use. I said, they couldn't use that much in 1 year. I said, I know they can't. And this depression won't be over in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But they can, they have the money, they can go to work with their present plans, and they can make plans for another year with assurance that they can keep going.
Again.
And that's what we did all during the depression,
you see,
was to provide additional funds. After that, they had to be matched. This was unmatched money.
The,
see,
yeah.
Before it was a, you had to match it before the ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it worked out.
Mm-hmm. That undoubtedly did a lot to build up the highway system.
Oh, it gave it a very fine start.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I feel that every paved highway in the West is a monument to Carl Hayden.
Well,
you told me one time, I think you told me one time that in talking with President Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, that some comment was made either by you or by him about the beautiful scenery out West. You said, yes, we've got it, but what's the use of having it if you can't get to it?
Well, different times during the depression, I go down there, I was always talking roads.
Mm-hmm.
He says, why are there no one's interested in roads? Or those days, I'm not interested in the roads in Arizona, I'm interested in a national system, highways, so people from the east and the north and the south, everywhere can come to Arizona. We've got the Grand Canyon and the petrified
now
forest.
They're finally getting
and we have in southern Arizona what we think is the finest winter climate anywhere. Well, we get to it.
Senator,
at the day the tourist crop is, how valuable in Arizona, I see it is.
Well, it's in the millions. I don't know what the figure is, but
I imagine so. Senator, I think it would be interesting if you'd talk a little bit about how Congress has changed, if you think it has changed, since 1912. Of course, in the way it operates, it hasn't changed much, but the type of men and...
There's been no deterioration in ability in the Congress. They were able men at all times who could discuss and act on important questions. Well, the times and the questions are different.
Mm-hmm.
The men are different, but I've seen any deterioration in ability.
Yeah.
Some people have kind of looked back and said, well, those were great men, and we haven't got them now.
Yeah.